Okay, let me talk about Blue Apron before we get going here. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door. They can be cooked in under 45 minutes. Can I play the music as I talk about Blue Apron? Yeah. Or no? Yeah, I can. Yeah. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. What happens in my house is a box comes to my house and it has all the ingredients. They're all pre-portioned. There's a card that tells me how to make the stuff, and then I make it. It's awesome. I don't have to make it right then. I can make it 2 days from then. I love Blue Apron. You know, you listen to the Bobbycast right now. If you go to blueapron.com/bobbycast, you too can get $30 off your first order. There's the pan-fried chicken breast with sweet and tangy zucchini. You can make that. The Italian-style shrimp and sweet peppers over frigola sort of pasta. You can make that. The Parmesan-crusted steaks with mashed... I feel like there's a big build-up to me for the food item here. Yeah! Or the quick bucatini! Yeah! Yeah, or... Listen, there's a lot. Just go look at it. blueapron.com/bobbycast. A great sponsor of the Bobbycast as we get into part two of this. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. Thank you for listening. I use it. I think it's really fantastic. So, as we're here, we are the second part of this with Jillian Jacqueline, and it was going so well the first time. I thought, let's just break it up into two. So, it's the first time I've ever done a part two with an artist. If you're listening to this now, check out part one with Jillian, because some of this may not make sense if you don't hear part one. So, check that out. In part two, there's a whole story that coming up about a monk. I'll just leave it there. Or how she met a monk. And it changed her course of her life. And it's pretty wild. Let me recommend to you the Rhett Akins episode and the Morgan number 2 episode on the Bobbycast as well. Jake Owen has a good podcast called Good Company with Jake Owen. The guys at Whiskey Riff have a very fan-oriented podcast called Whiskey Riff Raff. So check that out. And then a new one from Velvet's Edge, which is style, fashion. That starts April 4th. So, all right, I don't know when you hear this, but thank you very much. Let's get into episode part number 2. Here we go. Thank you very much. Is episode one? Was last episode 111? Oh, we're episode 112. Holy cow. All right, Jillian Jacqueline, here you go. All right, back. Part two of the Jillian Jacqueline Bobbycast. Do you like the chairs?
I really like them. It's sort of one of those chairs where you can't sit up. You have to sit back.
You have to relax.
So you just kind of feel like you're doing like an awkward lean back and your neck feels weird. But
and then all of a sudden you become so relaxed you just...
And start like crying and talking about your mom. Yeah.
People have cried in here before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm. Let me say this, because the last one we left off on was I got the weirdest text from Jillian before you got to my house. Because first of all, I said, hey, if you want to bring your fiance, bring them, because I like them. Most of the time people that come do this, they may bring somebody if I don't know them very well. So a lot of times they won't. Sometimes they won't. It just depends.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, I like your fiance. If you guys are, just tell him to come over. I'm cool. Like, have him come hang out.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I'm coming alone. So I said, okay, cool. And then you said, yeah, but do you have any water? And I was like, you know, this is a newer model home.
You're like, we have an ice box.
Where we keep it cool.
That was just me being weird. But I was really thirsty, and I didn't know if I should stop at a gas station for some water.
We had water for her, right? Yeah. Like bottles of water?
Yes, right here. It's...
You haven't even
it's
drank
expensive
any.
Smart water. Yeah, I did. I have to pee a lot, usually. Too much information, but
no.
I didn't want to have to get up.
I have a whole peeing thing where I try to hydrate myself, because we're always dehydrated.
Always.
As humans,
so
we're
thirsty
always
all the time.
Dehydrated.
Yeah.
And if we don't, even if we don't feel it, we're still dehydrated.
Right.
But if you drink the right amount of water, you have to pee all the time, which then keeps you up at night, so you're not getting the right sleep.
It's just a mess. I know. On planes,
God
I try
bless
to...
this mess, as you would say.
God bless this mess. That I just made on the floor because I peed my pants.
Yes. Yeah. What were you saying on trains? Is that what you were going to say? Maybe it's on a train.
No, on planes.
On
planes, you know, you got to keep drinking water for your skin to stay hydrated, but then you have to get up. I am always the person on planes who's like, everyone's like, she's walking back there again, like constantly just going back to go pee.
So do you aisle it then, if you have to pee all the time? Because if you don't aisle it and you're windowing it, you have to make people move.
Yeah, I always try to aisle it. Well, the good thing with me and Brian, my fiance, he travels with me because he plays guitar for me. So I always have a guaranteed like seat holder. And he is one of those people that he goes on the app for the airline like 2 days before to make sure he has the right seat. I'm not that kind of person, but he always makes sure. He will never sit at the window. That would make him panic. So.
Oh, I only sit at the window.
What if you have to pee? And you
have
to climb over. What if they fall asleep? That's my worst nightmare.
Well, so that happens. And I will, if I don't know the person, I won't. I'll just hold it.
Oh, wow.
I'll internally injure myself. I know. I will. But most of the time, I'm not. Mike D always travels with me because he produces the radio show on the road.
Yeah.
Or He really does everything. He does 10 minutes of stand-up before I go out. He'll sell merch. He does everything. Nice. So he rides, and he either will sit aisle, or he also knows if I don't want to sit by anyone. So he just eliminates the sick person syndrome.
Oh, nice. Because
I always feel like somebody's going to sit next to me, and they're sick, and I'm going to get sick, and yeah. I can't do the show.
Yeah. So do you wear those little masks ever?
I don't. Some, yes. If
I think
I'm
they
sick,
scare people, so I don't want to wear one.
If I'm sick because I'm worried about other people,
yeah.
Because I wish they would be worried about me, which they're not.
No.
Yeah. I'll cover my mouth.
Yeah.
When I was in Japan, everybody wore them.
Everybody.
And I said, this is the greatest culture ever. There's no litter. People have on masks.
Yeah.
They're kind. I was like an NBA player. I was walking around having a duck thing. I was on the... And I'd never been anywhere in my life. Like, I grew up in Arkansas until I was 27. I didn't even on vacation, right? Never
yeah.
anywhere.
Yeah.
I went to Japan. I was like, what? It's a different world.
I've never been there. My mom's been. She said it was very clean. She said what you said. And she said on, like, the public transportation, everyone sits, like, not... They don't touch each other. Like, in New York City, they don't get close. And they if they cough, you know, they'll cough very quiet.
And they all wear masks.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
And I'm tall.
Yeah.
You'd be average.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, well, so I went to Thailand after college for 3 months, and I was like a giant white.
Wow.
Just like.
You went to Thailand for 3 months?
Yeah, well, I went to Thailand and then Vietnam and Cambodia with my mom. She lives in Thailand. So I went with her right, like literally the day after I graduated college, I flew to Bangkok. And I lived there. I taught English at a school.
What?
Yeah.
What is happening here?
Yeah.
Well, tell me about this. What's that experience like?
It's incredible. It was, I got restless after a while because I needed something to do, but I randomly met this monk when I was, like, at a temple walking around just
in
as a tourist.
Thailand.
Yeah. And I this is such a weird story, but, you know, the monks, they wear orange robes, but they also carry cell phones, like, in their robes today. How many years ago? 7 years ago. So anyway, this monk came up to me and he was like, had this cell phone. He was talking to someone on the phone and he handed it to me. And this woman, he knew I was American, obviously. And so this woman was on the other end of the line and she was like, hello, do you speak English? And I said, yes. And she said, hi, I'm so-and-so. He handed you the phone because he knows you can speak English.
Wow.
Our English teacher just broke her leg. She, like, tripped on the street. Do you want to teach English
what?
At our school? I'm not kidding. And I was like, sure. And I actually had wanted to get my teaching certificate to teach English. So I was like, the gods have, like, shined down on me. And I just did it. I taught these kids at this school at the temple for about a month. And I had no idea what I was doing. But I just kind of, like...
How did you talk to them?
So I didn't speak Thai. So all they wanted me to do was read them English words. They wanted me to read to these kids in English and explain, like, you know, show a picture of a bug and say bug. Show a picture of a fork and say fork. Like, that kind of thing. They were, like, 6 and 7 years old.
So, a monk with a cell phone got
yes.
you a job teaching English in Thailand.
Yes.
Is that the greatest story you've ever heard on the podcast? Wow.
Well, but this is the point of the story is he knew I was American because I was massive compared to all these tiny Thai people. And I was, like, sweating all the time because I wasn't used to the heat. And... You know, I just like stood out like a sore thumb. So I did that. And then, you know, we went to Vietnam and Cambodia and just kind of explored. And then I had one of my crying on the bathroom floor moments there. And I was like, what am I doing? I have to go back to start my life because I had just graduated and I really wanted to get to Nashville. So I left and flew back. And then I was at my dad's house for like a couple weeks. And then he flew me down to Nashville. I had like one bag, and my sisters already lived here. They were signed to Sony. Bobby's shaming me.
No.
My mouth noises.
No, I'm just
That's just how I clear my throat.
Like, cool.
I have to go.
Before the podcast, I said, hey, you're popping a bit. Like, and so when you did it the first time, I just wanted you to know.
Like, yeah. All right. I'm very conscious of it now.
Okay.
So anyway, my sisters were already living in Nashville, signed to Sony as the Luna Bells, and so I moved in with them. I like slept on a futon in my sister's room for
all
a while.
Older? Sisters all older?
No, two older and one younger.
So they were a band?
Yeah.
All of them without you?
We grew up in a family band, the four of us.
Now, I knew you did that. I knew there was a group, a sister dynamic. What do you call it, like the Little Women or something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But wait, how did you get disconnected from them, though?
When I was 16 and when our parents... Around the time that our parents were getting divorced, it took a couple of years, I decided to leave the band. I wanted to go back to high school for 2 years, and I wanted to do my own thing creatively as an artist. So I was working with my own producer and going to high school, and yeah, I just kind of exited the family group.
You left the group of sisters.
Yeah, and then they moved to Nashville without me.
And they got a deal? Or are you like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, for a minute, I was pretty like, wow.
Would they have let you back in?
I don't think so. No. My older sister took over lead singing, and so I...
Oh, you were the lead singer and you left the band?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, but it's all... It worked out the way it should.
Wait, what are they doing now?
They're in New York City and LA, and one of them is a mom.
Are they being creative?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. My youngest sister, Gabby, is an incredible artist. She just randomly started painting and she's incredible. I'm not kidding. Like, she has an Instagram. It's Gabriella Lucia.
Wait, hold on. Say that. Cause I want people to go to
it. Yeah. It's Gabriella Lucia.
Gabriella?
Art. Gabriella with one L.
Okay. Spell
Gabriella Lucia, L-U-C-I-A. And I think it's Gabriella Lucia Arts.
Okay.
That's her Instagram. She's so great. She's so good. She was the drummer, and she's a really good drummer. And honestly, when I can, I want to bring her on the road with me. I want her to be my drummer.
That's cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But right now, she's in New York City, and she loves it there. And then my other sister, Dominique, is in L.A. She actually dates Sean Watkins from Nickel Creek, and they tour together. She plays piano. They make records, and they're happy and in love, and they have chickens in Silver Lake. They're very L.A. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow, look at you. You leave the sister band where you're the lead singer. What balls.
Yeah, it was
you're risking
a rough time.
Your relationship with them. I mean, they got to be pissed.
They were pissed. Yeah, and my mom was pretty upset, too, because she had sort of been our manager for most of our childhood, and she didn't want us to be broken up. But it started happening more so when I was young, because I was working with Kenny Rogers, and his management company only wanted to sign me. When I was 13.
Because you were the singer?
Yeah, because I was the singer and you know, I had started sort of the whole thing. So that sort of became an issue because I was getting opportunities on my own without them, and I kind of liked that.
But they were still good enough without you to get a record deal?
They were great.
You guys must have been phenomenal. You pull out the lead singer and the group assistant
all very driven, passionate people. Nothing was going to stop them. And they were very talented. They are very talented. So, and they wanted it, you know.
So. Wow. So you come, first of all, where are you born?
Chester Springs, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So what's Chester Springs, Pennsylvania like?
It's a boring suburb outside of Philadelphia. It's got a couple high schools. It's like, it kind of looks like Franklin, Tennessee. When you drive out to it.
So how did you get into country music?
My mom is from Charleston, South Carolina, and she just only ever listened to country. And so from the time I was a baby, I mean, we only listened to country. Patsy Cline was the first thing I heard. And then, you know, all the 90s country. I really didn't grow up with the super traditional, like, I didn't listen to a lot of Waylon Jennings or Merle Haggard or Johnny Cash. I got into that stuff later. It was more so 90s, like whatever was on the radio. On like the popular country radio station. So, you know, Trisha Yearwood and Patti Loveless. And I was a huge fan of just, you know, all of them. I mean, Garth Brooks, Trace Adkins, whatever, Dwight Yoakam, you know.
So you go and you're playing music with your sisters. Mm-hmm. You're being schooled, I'm assuming, on the road.
Homeschooled,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. But out. I mean, homeschooled feels like you're only in the house, but you're traveling and you're learning, right?
Yeah. We did a lot of road tripping. We actually had laptops. And there was a curriculum on the laptop that we would all learn from.
Have a drink of water. I see you pulled it up. Have a
drink.
Thank
you much. Yeah, no, we were all sort of taught to gravitate towards the things that we really enjoyed. I mean, we had to obviously do all the subjects, but like I loved history and language arts, and I wanted to write and read books all day. So that's what I did most of the time.
You think about writing a book?
Yes, I have. I want to.
Yeah?
Yeah. I will eventually, at some point, will hole up somewhere and start writing everything down because my childhood was pretty insane.
So you want to write a nonfiction?
Oh, yeah. I want to write, like, the story. Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting.
I mean, maybe not, like, for anyone else to read, but I just
want
to write
it. Well, yeah, you want people to read
it. I want to process it, though. I was talking about this with Brian the other day. My fiancé.
Right.
And I was saying how I read books when I was younger, these autobiographical books by incredible authors, And they would describe to me their lives of when they were kids and their parents, and they would do it with such reality that I would relate my own life to them. And it would make me think about my parents the way they thought about theirs. And so I think there's like power to sort of telling your story because it encourages other people to think about theirs that way too.
I think you bring up a good point. It's something I didn't learn until I actually wrote a book. And I never planned to write a book, like a book that adults would read. I wanted to write a kid's book. And I put out a kid's record, and the record was actually pretty good for a kid's record. I thought it was – and it sold well. Cracker Barrel bought it, and they just sold it at Cracker Barrel. It was like it was a good enough kid's record to, like, matter. And I said, okay, like, I want to provide an influence for children because I didn't have many positive influences. Mm. And so I start shopping this kid's book idea. Nobody wants it. Nobody knows who I am. They're not supposed to. Man, I'm going to New York and L.A. offices. They don't know anything about country music. They don't know anything about my radio show. Nor should they, but nope. Over and over, nope.
Oh, man.
So 9th or 10th, no. I'm in an office, and they say, hey, the idea, the kids book idea, there's a lot of kids books, and they're expensive because you have to hire an illustrator. And
oh, yeah.
I said, but your life story, we were Wikipediaing you. Tell us about your life story. I said, okay, here's what happened. Tell my story. I said, would you write a book about that? And I thought, I'll try, but I don't think anybody can relate.
Huh.
And I don't think anyone wants to hear my story because who cares? That's what I thought.
Really?
Like, who's going to care what I have to say? And so I write this book, and I'm miserable the whole time.
Just reliving it all.
No. I tell you, that to me, because reliving it sucks, but I go to a therapist for that, and sometimes I just hide it and stuff it in a hole and it doesn't come out. But I just felt embarrassed because I thought, here's this book that I put a lot of me into that nobody's going to care about because no one's going to understand, so no one's going to read it. But I would go out to shows, and listeners would go, well, hey, you know what it really resonated? And it was one of the small details that I thought no one would ever even – it has to be like with music when you put a song out.
Yes.
And someone goes, oh, that song. This is how it relates. And that's what happened to me with my book.
Completely.
I just thought it was the most uninteresting, self-indulgent at times.
Yeah.
Piece of garbage.
Huh.
But it was honest.
Interesting that you felt that way.
Oh, I was horribly embarrassed.
Well, you're so right, though. Like, I don't think we all realize how alike we are in our stories. You know, I think when we all really start looking at, like, the intricacies of our lives, we all have really weird shit going on.
And we don't talk about it enough.
We don't talk about it.
So it seems weird.
Yes.
Which is... And again,
but it's not. It's normal for all of us. If we were honest, you know.
My second book, it's really about that. It's about how we don't talk about all the crappy stuff we go through, the failures, because it's not cool to share it.
Yeah.
So then we feel like we're doing it alone.
Totally. Yeah, I talked to Lori McKenna about this because, you know, I've always looked at her songs as these, like, microscopes on life and on marriage and family. And she puts in all the details, like the color of the dress and the water coming from the kitchen sink and the where the sun was and whatever, the dirt on the floor. And it's so specific. That's why it resonates, because she's actually painting the picture for you and you can see yourself in that story. And, you know, I think sometimes what frustrates me about popular music is the lack of color, the lack of truth. Like, I want to know what you were doing in that moment, you know, not just what, like, anyone can relate to. And I'm pulling this over into songwriting.
No,
but for me,
that's why you're here.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's like, you know, that's what I'm always trying to figure out how to do better in songs, is to, like, tell people something that no one else could tell them except me, but that they will understand, you know. That feels hard to do.
Yeah, and I think that's why few people can do it at such a high level.
Yeah.
That's why Lori's fantastic at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear Humble and Kind. Lori, that's a girl. I mean, listen, just Google Lori McKenna, and you'll see all the big songs she's written. But I think the simplicity, yet the depth of Humble and Kind, if you can nail them both, and she did in that song.
She did. She's one of the few that her natural instincts have turned into hit songs like that. She writes them all by herself, and you know, it's that's rare, because that's just what she does, like, as an artist herself. But when Tim McGraw sings it, it actually works too. So, you know, that's an incredible accomplishment. I'm still learning from her all the time.
Should I do a commercial? The IRS released their annual Dirty Dozen, list of tax scams and phone scams, top the list. In the most common scam, callers pose as IRS representatives. They tell taxpayers they owe money, and they have to pay promptly or be punished, so people do, and then they're out money, their identities are stolen. So many threats today in the connected world. It takes 1 week link, and all of a sudden, boom, somebody's in. So new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect you against threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. If you have a problem, their agents will work to fix it. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BONES for an additional 10% off your first year. That's the promo code BONES. I use LifeLock, by the way. I use it. I love it. That's the promo code BONES. LifeLock.com, promo code BONES for an additional 10% off.
We played the song here. We've got all our reasons. This is Reasons. This is the one that's making its big play up the radio chart right now. So how'd you guys decide on this song? You have this whole packet of songs.
Yeah.
Because you didn't just make one and go, this is the one. You had a whole handful of songs.
This was the song I was most excited about. Honestly, this song felt really brave and bold, and production-wise, it really excited me. I felt like Topher and I kind of did something that we hadn't done before, and it felt like really new. It felt like me.
Let me listen to this. Yeah. Like I haven't heard it 10,000 times. I don't want to be a quitter. Don't want to have to answer when everybody asks me why. Giving up. What do you think hearing this song now for the 10,000th time? Like, what's going through your head right then? It can be maybe you just want to get out of here, but what's going through your head?
It feels weird that actually happened to me.
What happened to you?
That after being with someone for that long, like, it completely just, like, fell apart, and then I wrote songs about it. I've never been that person. So when I, like, really started writing songs in Nashville, I was dating that person. So, and I was writing pretty songs that had nothing to do with love. I actually was, like, adamantly, I don't want to write about relationships. I have other things to say. I put out an entire EP that was not about love or relationships at all. I was like, I'm bored. I don't want to be a female talking about that stuff. So I avoided it at all costs. And also, I don't know how to say this, but I really didn't have the inspiration to write love songs in the relationship that I was in. And that sounds harsh, but it's kind of true. I wasn't there in my heart. So now hearing this back and realizing that I literally, that happened, and that happening to me became the moment that my entire perspective as a songwriter shifted. It was almost like it had to happen. It had to happen for me to get to where I am now, because, I mean, those songs wouldn't exist, obviously, and that level of transparency in me as an artist wouldn't exist. I mean, I put my story into these songs, and he was a real person. He is a real person. You know, we had a real life together, and so now it's sad, I guess, but it also feels weird that, like, all these wonderful things have happened in my career because of that honesty.
Do you feel that your pain has been what's been the catapult of your creativity, so therefore you must suffer more pain to create more? Are you one of those?
Well, I agree with the first half. I'm still struggling with the second half of what you said of I need to suffer more. I think I believed that for a long time. I think part of me still feels like art is suffering and life isn't supposed to be happy. You know, I think life is supposed to be interesting. There's supposed to be happy moments, but I think I've always sort of found this beauty in, like, the very dark stuff. And I'm trying to figure out if I know how to be an artist without the heavy stuff, you know?
I'm a big believer that pain is the only reason that I'm able to do anything creative. And it's a bad place, and I'm told I have to get out of there.
Yeah, I probably do too. But again, Adele is Adele for a reason. I mean, we love listening to her sing about her heartbreak because it feels so raw and real when she does it. So I've argued that for a long time, that all of the greatest people in the world were so tortured. I mean, the greatest of anything that they could do. The artists, you know, the painters, the singers, the writers were I mean, alcoholics and just completely miserable for most of their existence. Why? Maybe because that level of suffering allows you to tap into, like, the most real form of being a human.
I have this argument with one of my friends all the time that I think to be truly different and creative, something has to be off about you, or you're not able to produce something that's off.
What do your friends say?
No. He says, no, man, you can just be really good at something. I say, yeah, but there's a difference.
Yeah.
I think in order to produce something that's off, you have to kind of be off. Someone from a well-adjusted, with no sign of mental illness, because I think I have a bit of that. Like, I really do. And I don't say there's a stigma, because
what do you mean?
I think that you have to produce something that's different, you have to be different. And something has to be affecting that different. It could be how you're growing up. It could be something chemically. It could be something you put in yourself with chemicals. But I think that to put out different, you have to be different.
Yeah, I would agree
and
with
he
that.
Just doesn't agree. No, a lot of well-adjusted,
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think that people that have something a little bit off or unique, or they just seem sort of like hell-bent to make their life really difficult, those are the people that are crazy enough to really sit in, like, the shit of life. Like, they will sit there and they will think about it and they will write about it and they will cry about it and they will feel it. Or they'll, like, do something to numb how much they feel it. But it has to be an extreme one way or the other.
Yeah, I think it's hard to produce something different if you're not different.
Yeah.
And I think that it's hard to actually talk about the difficulties without having been in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say I'm getting married. I'm not going to go to a priest that's never been married. And I have this problem with therapists. If they haven't been through some real garbage times, how are they going to understand what I've been through? Now, I don't think I've been through the worst, but I need someone that can at least understand.
Yeah. Wait, so do you, like, vet them?
Oh, absolutely.
You sit down and you're like, so what's your childhood like?
You can laugh, but that's exactly what
really?
I do. Yeah, and they don't want to share a lot of times, but that's okay. I can fill them out because I need to know how they grew up. Because are they going to understand me? If they don't understand what I've come from, again, not the best, not the worst.
So you don't think, like, a healthy, objective viewpoint is necessary?
I think healthy is relative.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
I think healthy is completely relative. And I don't think anyone really has a healthy viewpoint. Objective, yes. And that's why I go. But I don't think anyone's healthy. I don't think that exists.
Well, I think a good therapist should be able to tell you about their stuff. Like, I think they should divulge and not make you feel so alone.
So with me now, I have a guy. I can't stay with a guy, and he's fantastic. I grew up with a mom. Then I was adopted by my grandma for a bit, and my mom left. And my grandma had me, and then had a bunch of sisters. So only I'm comfortable with women. So to talk to a dude is so uncomfortable for me, and it's not fair to him.
Oh.
But if I can't feel like in a safe spot, I can't.
So you're
do
leaving
it.
Him?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know.
Are you going to have the breakup conversation?
I'm a sexist.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, but I just don't feel comfortable. It's, and I have trouble anyway connecting.
Yeah. Well, I lied in my song last night, the song I played, Tragic. You know, it says, I found a cheap therapist. I haven't. I don't. I went to someone like 2 times, and she's awesome, but I have yet to find, like, an actual therapist that
I feel.
You
won't, though, until you spend 5 times with them. Yeah. You just didn't go enough.
Yeah.
You just, I mean, really.
Well, I'm the kind of person, I walk in there and I'm like, okay, be on your best behavior. Just say all the right things. Like, I try to win them over. Like,
yeah,
that's so counterproductive to what's happening here.
It's like dating or a reality show. Meaning, eventually, the cameras are just there. At first, you're like, ooh, the cameras are there. We got to act a certain way. Yeah. Then eventually, you're just on the real world. And the cameras are there, and it's just a part of life.
Yeah.
I've found that if I don't invest time in dating them, how am I going to marry them? So I have to date. And
the longest relationship you've had with a therapist?
Probably 4 years.
That's a
good time. And I moved from Austin, and I still would FaceTime.
Yeah.
And then it was just like a long-distance relationship. It fades. And then I
you needed the physical contact.
I needed to be held accountable. And on FaceTime, you're not held accountable. And this other guy I went to was younger. He was like 30 or
you're
something.
Like, what do you
He's
know?
A few years younger. I was like, what are you talking about? You're younger than I am.
Yeah.
I felt like going, hey, dude. I'll call the shots here. Yeah. I'm a few years older than you. This session is over.
Well, I kind of always feel like I have the worst, darkest thoughts that I could tell no one. And I don't want to be sitting across from this person thinking, oh my God, if they knew that what I've thought, like, that would be horrible. Like, I need to be with someone that can get in the trenches with me.
They need to understand, which is back to my point.
Yeah.
You don't want someone that has never been in the trenches to get in the trenches with
right.
you.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know you're meant, I have to go to someone sometimes just to.
No, I should probably be going regularly.
No.
With the way my life is right now, there's a lot of things changing and happening. And, you know, I'm one of those people where I will go until I break. Like, until I, like, have to be in bed for a full day because I can't function. Like, I will do that just because. Have you done the Enneagram?
No, but everybody talks about it, right?
Definitely a three, so. I'm a three. Anyway,
What's a three? What are we then?
We are the achiever, but I'm pretty sure you're a three. But, like, the three is so good at when everything's busy and there's chaos and lots going on, we are like, yes,
that's my coasting, my place. Happy,
functional, yes. But the minute that something changes from that, we panic and we, like, spiral so fast and we just crave, like, busy, 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 always busy. And so to actually have to look ourselves in the mirror and, like, think about ourselves and our lives is so painful. Like, I can't meditate to save my life. I have tried and tried. It's so hard for me.
Yeah. I just end up turning TV Land back on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, screw it. Turn Mom or Friends back on. Because yeah. I've tried.
It's really hard.
I had a terrible PTSD. I've been robbed and jumped a few times. And so.
Here?
Just in different places. Okay. Like, with work. People have put guns to my head. But, you know, just.
Oh, man.
I've had some crazy
That's
experiences.
Scary.
And it really effed me up.
Yeah, I've never had that.
And so I couldn't sleep for years.
Wow.
And I got addicted to sleeping pills because it's the only way I was sleeping.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to meditate. I'm going to turn everything off. I'm going to sit like Buddha does. And I swear to God, I tried.
Yeah.
I tried as hard as
Valiant
I could.
Valiant effort.
And I would go, okay, and I would try to find my place and just center on it. And then all of a sudden, well, it's 6:15 tomorrow, I got to do this. And stop it. And I would go, stop, push everything back away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, what are my dogs up to? I wonder what Twitter. I couldn't focus.
I know. I feel you. I'm the same way. I don't know what it's going to take, but someday I will crack that meditation code.
I just
code.
Don't think you are because.
Oh, thank you for the vote
of
confidence.
No, I'm going to tell you why because we're both threes on the idiot scam. Whatever it's called. What's it called?
The ideogram. The idiot scam.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
No, I say that too, but you've already shown with your lack of commitment to a therapist. That you crave chaos. Man. You're like me. You chase chaos.
I do sort of believe that if I get like healthy, like whatever healthy is, I won't know who I am anymore.
This is what I just asked you. Do you have to be in a bad place? And that doesn't mean relationship. But you're answering all the questions like five paragraphs later.
I can't help it. I'm a rambler.
No, it's not a bad
thing.
I'm
not a professional radio talk show
host. You're talking yourself into answers. You just said way later that you need this crap. And
what?
If you don't
yeah.
have it,
yes.
you have to go find it.
So what you just said, like the way you just described how I answer things, is the way I live my life. I think I have it all figured out, but I'm going through it. And then years later, it's like late bloomer times 1,000. I'm like, oh, I get it now. Okay, that's embarrassing that took me that long. Like, I don't, my processing is very meandering. But it, you know, I get there eventually.
Isn't that all that matters?
Yeah.
That you get there eventually. Do I need to do a commercial or anything? Quick. No? I'm good? Okay. All right, sorry. This is Bleachers. This one feels a bit different than the rest of the record. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Than the rest of the EP, whatever you're
going
to call it.
Yeah, the rest of the EP.
The body of music.
Yeah.
And maybe just because it feels super happy.
Yeah. This is probably maybe like a alter ego song, but that part of me exists, you know, I have that. And there are a lot of songs coming on the rest of the album that feel like that, you know, because there's songs like Holier Than Thou too that sort of have a sense of humor, but yeah, that's part of me. There's a lot. I mean, I've always argued this about artists because
it wasn't a bad thing. I was just making an observation.
Oh yeah.
When I listen to the record, it's like, because I love sad music.
Me too.
It's all I listen to. If I'm picking the music, it's all sad music. So I think that's why I also was like down with your sound.
Yeah.
I was like, this is it. I love it. And then Bleachers comes on. I'm like, next. No, I think it's a great song.
Thanks.
But it was just different than the rest.
Yeah.
Like sonically, tempo is different.
We had fun with it. Yeah. Kind of got funky.
No, I like it. You made me feel like I said it. I never said anything about it.
I don't know how to, whatever. It's, yeah. I'm glad you like it.
I do like it. I do. I would have
played it. Yeah. No, that song is sort of one of those anthems.
You play that live? And
we do. Yeah, we play it live with the full band. We really can't do it like any other way.
Maybe that's why, because I haven't heard you play it.
Yeah, we can't do it with just guitars. We need rhythm, so.
Don't we all? Don't we all need rhythm?
Speaking of, I don't have any, but.
No?
Somehow I make it through.
Can't dance at all?
Nope.
It's weird. You know, there have been only a few.
Like what dancing is considered in society, I can't do.
You don't have rhythm.
I do my own form.
You can dance.
Yeah.
Do you dance in public?
Yeah.
Will you?
If okay. I've had like a few.
But that's all that matters. Like yeah. Really, at this point in our lives, who cares?
Yeah, we'll dance in public.
So you'll dance?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to be really good.
At dancing?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
I have decent rhythm.
Like hip-hop moves or
I mean, aren't they all the
ballroom?
Same?
You just,
no, I don't have a ballroom. Waltz. I did take country line dancing to meet girls. And then it was all, I was.
What kind of girls?
First of all, I was 21 years old, right? Second of all, I thought it would be, it was a college class. I was in college.
Oh, wow.
And then it turns out they were all non-traditional students that came back. So they were all like 40-year-olds that would come. I didn't meet any girls. It was all moms. So I line danced but I got an A. I was good. It was good.
You got an A.
I got an A.
A for effort. That's awesome.
Yeah, but I'll dance a little bit. But I grew up. I went to school. We danced a lot.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, like the hip thing. Like, you know when people can do stuff with their hips? I can't do that.
I've lost a bit of it. I lost half step. But
yeah.
I think if I got back into it, I'd be pretty good.
Yeah. I should probably take some like salsa lessons or something.
But you won't. You'll go once and be like, nah, I'm good.
Probably.
I'm
that good sounds like something I would do. Yeah, you got me figured out.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go to the next thing.
Yeah.
What about this? If I play this song here.
Do you know who that is singing?
Is this a game? Should I listen if I figure it out?
Yeah.
Do you know who it is, Mike? You do?
Someone like you. There's one move in there that's so signature, like, of that person, I feel like.
Okay, hold on, let me do this again. Hold on. Okay.
Overdue. I'm so overdue for a little bit too good to be
I mean, if I, it's hard to hear it with you, but it sounds like Vince Gill.
It is Vince Gill.
It is?
Ding, ding, ding. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's up with that song?
Yeah, so that was the first song I released as an artist after moving to Nashville. And this was, like, at the beginning of, like, Spotify and everything. So I just randomly put it out and I didn't have publishing, I didn't have anything, and I wrote it with Topher, and I was working with Richard Marx at the time.
Like Richard Marx, the 80s singer?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. He was doing some stuff here in town, and so I was introduced to him through a mutual friend, and he heard me, and I guess he was looking for a project to produce, and so he was like, hey, do you want to do something? So we did 5 songs, that was one of them. And the intent was to, like, pitch to labels and get me a record deal, which never happened. But he was friends with Vince, and so he asked Vince if he would sing background vocals on it, and Vince said yes. And then we got to write together, and that was amazing. Yeah, but that song is just really special to me because, I mean, obviously Vince is on it, but that song was very true at the time. And, you know, I have to say, I appreciate about that song that we were talking earlier about the pain with my breakup inspiring all these songs on side A. That song right there proved to me that the narrative, you know, already existed before all that happened. Like, because that song feels like me still. Like, if I play it at a show. Like,
really?
And people ask me to play it. Yeah.
And you're not too cool to play it?
No.
That's
of course
cool.
not. No.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, I did want to bring this up. By the way, stream Jillian's music, download her music, go to a show. You're out with you have a cool tour, huh, this year?
Yeah, well, next weekend we go out with Thomas Rhett
for the
first
time.
Why. Yeah, and then we do the Brett Eldredge tour with Devin Dawson, which is like gonna be my first actual tour, like night after night playing cities and with my band, so I'm very, very excited.
That's cool.
Yeah,
especially with Thomas Rhett. Like, he's notoriously good to his opening acts.
Really?
Like, super, yeah.
That's awesome.
He's a good dude, though.
And I feel like he's a good dude. We haven't met yet.
But. Yeah, because I know you a bit, and I know him. He's a good dude.
That's awesome.
And this town's not full of bad people, but some people, everybody's just so worried about themselves.
Yeah.
That he takes care of others.
That's really cool.
Yeah, he's a good one.
Yeah. He seems like he's been able to keep his perspective on everything, on his life, on his family, everything, even as his career is kind of just blown up. Like, he seems like a really down-to-earth, awesome guy.
You know what's funny? Last night we were doing this show. You were playing, and I was hosting it. And you said, hey, I want to show you my engagement video. And do you remember the first thing I said back to you was?
Nope.
I said, how long is it?
Oh, yeah.
No, and you looked at me. You kind of had like a, it shouldn't matter how long. Yeah. I just watched my stupid video.
Yeah.
But I like to explain why I said that.
Okay.
Because I haven't shaken this, because I saw like a grimace on your face that I even asked. I should have watched the video.
No, that wasn't like, I didn't take that personally. I thought it was funny.
Well, have you ever, I was just being honest too.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you ever had someone go, hey, you should check this out, and they show, and it's like, they're like, hey, look at this YouTube. It's like 7 minutes long.
Yes.
And then
and
you
it's
have
like
to sit there
loading.
For 7 minutes. So I wanted to ask ahead of time, because I was going to be completely honest, to go, if it's like 3.5 minutes, I'm probably going to check out minute 1 through 250.
Hey, I appreciate that. I mean, I still would have tried to make you watch
it. And I would have watched it, but yeah. I wanted you to know ahead of time that I'm probably going to be wandering in my head. But it wasn't. It was really beautiful.
Was short. It was like 13 seconds.
It was the best length I've ever seen of a video.
I cut out all the kissing parts.
Yeah, it was the favorite length I've ever seen of a video, in all lengths of video. So it was you and your fiance, and you were in Paris in front of the Eiffel Tower. And what did he say to you? He said, just look at the camera.
Yeah, he said we should take a video for our family back home of when the Eiffel Tower sparkles, because it sparkles on the hour, every hour. And it was almost 1 a.m., and so we walked up there, and he's like, all right, get your phone out, and we'll take a video. I was like, all right, cool. So we're standing there. The Eiffel Tower is behind us. And mid-video, you know, we're kissing and talking, whatever. And then he pulled out the ring, you know, from the left side. And so he sort of brings the ring up into the frame of the video. So I'm watching us on the video screen, and it takes me a second to focus my eyes onto the actual real-life ring. And then I go through about 6 different facial expressions before I just started crying. But it was really awesome.
It was really great, because it's genuine confusion, happiness,
shock.
And just like boom, boom, boom. Again, the perfect length of expressions. Like, I really enjoyed but that did hang with me, because I thought, oh. At this point, you and I have had conversations where I'm like, oh, sometimes people think I'm a dick, because I'm just very matter-of-fact. Like, hi, this is how I feel. I hope it's cool. If not, that's cool too, but let's move on with our lives, good or bad.
Yeah.
But I felt, I was like, oh, maybe I should have, before she asked me, just taken the video. 10 minutes and just watch it all.
It's okay.
Okay, because that hung with me a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I didn't even think about it.
Good. How long is this one?
40 minutes.
Okay, we'll kind of call it here. But check out Side A from Jelly and Jacqueline. With such song. And just Side A now. These podcasts live forever. Next year, you could be a huge star, and you're on Side F at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hope I didn't say anything I shouldn't have said.
Probably. You'll get home and go, man, that hour and a half, I said so many things.
Has anybody called you and been like, can you please not put that part in?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. So I won't do that.
Well, it goes up quick.
Ooh.
Yeah, so. Yee. But also, if you said something.
I didn't.
Defamatory.
Yeah, I don't think I did.
I'd say, let's probably beep that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
You've got
reasons. Let me just play some of these here. Ooh, what a good one. Or my favorite, Hate Me.
Come on in.
Oh, I relate to that song. I talked it out and realized why I like that song so much in the last podcast.
Yeah.
God bless this mess.
God bless this mess. This is as good as it's gonna get.
Oh, Sugar and Salt. That's a jam, too.
Oh, thank you.
I love this.
Sometimes it's good and sweet. Hey, sometimes it turns into a bitter thing. But when it comes to you, when it comes to me, love and misery.
Most of the time the artist sings with them, and it's kind of cool, but
I
like to sing. I like to sing with them, because I really like the song. Yeah. Somebody?
Oh, yeah, this isn't on Side A.
I know, but I'm just playing songs again, because also I'm Without Me from The Little Women. go ahead. You know, I had that ready.
Oh, my God. No, please don't play that again. Are you kidding me? Where did you find
that?
What
do you mean? What do you mean? Let's listen.
No! Turn that show off.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Why don't you like that?
Where did you find that? Oh, man, that is like
did you scrub the
massive
internet?
Levels of embarrassment. I was probably like 13 years old when that song was written and recorded.
Then why are you... I don't know. I didn't know what you were going
to do. Wait, can I see... Like, where did you even get that?
Don't worry about how
we
do things.
Wow, you guys, that is impressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you find Room to Grow?
Don't worry about what we found. Hey,
Lee. Ooh, there's some dark stuff in there. I actually just found out that my... God. That album is out on Spotify somewhere. The Little Women Band exists. And I don't know, none of us put it up, so I don't know who put it up. But I think it's just embarrassing because those songs are like, we were 13 and had no idea what we were singing about. And we just...
But that's okay.
What are those lyrics? Without me, you'll see. Without me, you'll see. What did you love
for? Without me, you'll have. She's got her hand on her head in shame. This is awesome. That's my favorite of all your songs.
Does that still sound like me?
No. It sounds like a kid. It's like a bunch of kids.
Right? It kind of sounds like a choir.
Yeah, it does sound like a choir. It's like a bunch of kids.
Who produced this? That's horrible.
You produced this?
No, I said who?
Oh. Topher when
hey,
he was
Hey, that was
13.
Embarrassing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
So, Side A, and then there's the other songs. I was just setting you up for that final.
Thank you.
But
wow,
no.
That was blast from the past that I didn't want.
Topher, your producer, I've talked about doing some hip hop stuff together.
He wanted to say hi. I can't believe you guys haven't met yet.
He came on the studio, but we didn't really. He played with you in the studio, right?
No, that was Brian.
No, I thought you had two players. No. Maybe I've just seen him on TV with you and go.
Yeah,
like
he
when
played
you played
on
Good Morning
Seth
America.
Myers.
Is that what it
Seth
was?
Myers. Yeah, he played on there. He always comes to just the fun stuff.
Okay, that's where I've seen him then.
Yeah, and he was on TV with us.
But
you guys
texted,
have to meet.
We've texted a bunch of times.
He is one of the greatest humans on the planet. Very lucky.
I do like great humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, but I like...
No, you guys would get along very well. He's awesome.
But, Topher, if you're listening, I got a little special song for you.
Can you remix this?
Yeah.
We should put this on the album, I think.
Yeah, on side B.
We should do a EDM remix, yeah.
Well, listen. Where do you go I think we've pretty much... done everything. We've said everything we can say.
Do you think that Ryan Adams will listen to this podcast?
I think if he's a fan of you and he stumbles across it, I don't think this will come up in his feed, his RSS feed or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think so.
Okay. That would be cool if he did.
He may.
Yeah.
He may be a Jillian. Have you spoken to him since you...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We talk on Twitter a lot.
He's awesome. By the way, you watch Wild Wild Country?
Yes, I did.
Holy
Well, I'm not
crap.
Done yet.
Oh, you're not done?
I'm not done yet.
What episode are you on?
Isn't there like
It's one season, six episodes.
Okay, so I think we're on like the fourth.
Oh.
We have two more to go. So what's her name just left?
Yeah, Sheila.
Sheila left, which I thought was so kind of abrupt and weird. I was like, where are you going? Why?
Which is why I liked it, because very Game of Thrones-y, where you don't know what's going to happen, and then you go, oh, I can expect anything,
yep.
Because it's not falling into the timeline of what normally happens.
Right. Is there, like, something mass suicidal going
to
happen?
I'm not going to tell you about it, but what was craziest to me... By the way, Wild Wild Country is a show on Netflix. It's a documentary series.
Yes.
It happened in Oregon, where this cult... They bought, like, 80,000 acres of land.
Yeah.
100 square miles. When you start to wrap your head around that...
Oh, yeah.
That's driving 2 hours. They own all of that. Going
their own airport. Yeah.
So, and they put a cult up there.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I didn't know the story.
Like, me either.
I'm really interested. Have you read the book Sapiens?
No.
Oh, man. It's not about cults, but it's about humans. And
okay. Should I read it?
I'm into it, and I think you'd really like it.
Yeah. I'll read it.
Yeah.
No, this is the best documentary I've seen in a long time.
But it's
time.
Great. Yep.
Yeah.
It's great. And also, I didn't know.
I
thought I knew everything about, like, big, crazy things in our history
in
the past 30 years.
It almost seems like someone like got it massively covered up after the fact.
It's like they did it without me. And just got cleared it of everything.
For all of you listening, I'm bright red and I wish he would stop playing this song.
Okay. Well, listen.
Oh my God.
This has been a good talk.
No.
I like to end it on that.
I hate that you played that.
But really, it's kind of fun, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool.
Whatever.
Have you had fun?
I have had so much fun. Yeah, I could do this for 10 more hours. But then you'd be like, get out of my house.
That's true, it would. You'd want all the water, and you've taken all the water. Jillian Jacqueline, listen to Side A, or if it's, you know, months and months later, just check her out, see what she's got up.
Yes.
See her live. I've... watched her live many times. Fantastic artist. And thanks for coming over to the house.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Bobby.
Yeah. All right, Jillian Jacqueline, and we'll see you next time, everybody.